This is Poetry Off the Shelf from the Poetry Foundation, February 25th, 2008. I'm Curtis Fox. This week, samples of documentary poetry. According to my dictionary, a documentary is a movie or a television or radio program that provides a factual record or report. Documentary poetry almost seems like an oxymoron. Poetry, after all, is generally thought to be grounded in subjective experience, not news reports or investigations. Yet, documentary poetry is a thriving genre, and here to explain where it comes from is Philip Metros. Philip Metros is a poet, translator, and scholar who wrote a brief survey of documentary poetry for poetryfoundation.org. It's called From Reznikov to Public Enemy, The Poet as Journalist, Historian, and Agitator. The article links to the texts of all the poems he talks about, and we're going to hear a few of them today. He joins me from WCPN in Cleveland. Hi, Philip.
Hey.
So, give me a quick and dirty definition of what documentary poetry is, if you would.
Well, I actually did precisely what you did after having written the article.
You went to the dictionary.
I went to the dictionary. And so I was brought back to that fundamental problem that all poets struggle with, which is, what is it precisely we're trying to do?
Mm.
The poetry that I talk about in the feature From Reznikov to Public Enemy originates with sort of the modernist era. And I think of figures like Pound and, of course, also Reznikov's famous books, Testimony, The United States, 1885 to 1890, and Holocaust.
That's Charles Reznikov. Yeah.
That's right, Charles Reznikov.
Who was born in the latter part of the 19th century and died as late as, I think, in the 1970s, right?
That's correct. What he was fascinated by was the fact that there were all these texts out there that he was working through, working in a legal publishing house, summarizing court records.
And he pulled all the language for these poems from legal records.
That's right. In fact, one of the techniques that he's using is doing very, very little embellishment.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it seems as if he's sort of condensing them away to their bare bones, sometimes literally.
Well, let's hear a bit from Domestic Scenes by Charles Reznikov.
It was nearly daylight when she gave birth to the child, lying on a quilt he had doubled up for her. He put the child on his left arm and took it out of the room, and she could hear the splashing water. When he came back, she asked him where the child was. He replied, "Out there, in the water." He punched up the fire and returned with an armload of wood and the child, and put the dead child into the fire. She said, "Oh, John, don't." He did not reply, but turned to her and smiled.
So there's a dead child, and a man tries to dispose of the body in a particularly weird way.
Right. And he clearly drowns his child here, right? And then disposes of it.
Oh, wait. It's not clear that he drowned his child here. I thought the child had died.
Well, it's unclear. I suppose it's unclear, right?
Yeah.
He clearly takes the child out of the room, and then there's splashing water. And I guess my presumption was that he drowned the child. But it could also be that the child was not alive after the birth. But that's what makes the Reznikov so fascinating, is that there's this sort of, the gears are stripped down from all of our sense of what exactly happened. And in that sense, it removes itself from that evidentiary context and confronts us with the sort of moment of violence and the moment of horror of the woman, and then the enigmatic smile at the end of the husband, the father.
America, I've given you all, and now I'm nothing. America, $2.27, January 17th, 1956. I can't stand my own mind. America, when will we end the human war? Go fuck yourself with your atom bomb. I don't feel good. Don't bother me. I won't write my poem till I'm in my right mind.
That, of course, America, is the beginning of America by Allen Ginsberg. You know, Philip, I was surprised to see Ginsberg on your list because I often think of him as kind of in a romantic bardic tradition, the Beats.
Right, exactly.
And so what makes America a documentary poem?
What this poem does so fascinatingly is the way in which it hails us back to those radical 1910s to 1930s.
America, Sacco and Vanzetti must not die. I am the Scottsboro Boys.
It was published and written in 1956, but it harkens back to this moment of time, which was very much Ginsburg's own youth, in which his mother, Naomi Ginsburg, would have been dragging him to Communist Party meetings. When he refers to the Wobblies and Sacco and Vanzetti and the Scottsboro Boys, he's also trying to remind those people in his historical moment of the ways in which America is far less homogeneous than the 1950s America would appear to the people of 1950s and to us.
America, when I was 7, Mama took me to communist cell meetings. They sold us garbanzos, a handful per ticket. A ticket cost a nickel and the speeches were free. Everybody was angelic and sentimental about the workers. It was all so sincere, you have no idea what a good thing the party was in 1835. Scott Nearing was a grand old man, a real mensch.
And so Mother this poem Blue written in 1956 and delivered in very different ways. The recording that you just played is the sober Ginsburg, but there's a very raucous reading of him doing this poem, which demonstrates, I think, the kind of multi-tonality of the poem.
The Russians are power mad. The Russia wants to eat us alive. She wants to take our cars from out our garage.
Williams and Zinger killed poor Hattie Carroll with a cane that he twirled around his diamond ring finger. At a Baltimore hotel, society gathering, and the cops was called in, and his weapon took from him as they rode him in custody down to the station and booked Williams and Zinger for first-degree murder. But you who philosophize.
You also include in your list Allen Ginsberg's friend and from the 1960s, Bob Dylan, and The Lonesome Death of Hattie Carroll. I was surprised by that choice as well. Why did you put that in there?
Well, I was shocked to discover how much it was, in fact, a kind of documentary or even journalistic song that he wrote it almost immediately after hearing the story in the news.
And the story was a wealthy white man in the South murdered his black maid and got only a few months in prison for it, correct?
That's right. And that it was then he played it regularly at live shows and on television. So what fascinated me about this poem / song is that it became immediately used as a kind of a way to extend the document. There's I forgot who used the phrase, but poetry is a way to extend the document. So in other words, when this story would disappear from the news, Dylan was there to remind us of it.
And that's one of the aspirations of documentary poets, I think, is actually to have an effect on the social and political world.
Right. Even poets and songwriters who don't have that access to national media do some critical cultural work in their poetry, even if they're just speaking to what we would call the already converted. In other words, they, when they write songs like The Lonesome Death of Hattie Carroll, are reminding the community who is working on behalf of the civil rights movement or who are experiencing the depredations of racial injustice that there are people telling those stories. And that they should have courage not to pretend that those stories don't matter.
So also in your list of documentary poets in the last, I guess, 75, 80 years, is what must be considered a classic of the genre. It's The Colonel by Carolyn Forché. And we actually had a chance to record her reading this poem a few weeks ago, and I'd like to play it for you in its entirety. Carolyn Forché was once a human rights activist in El Salvador. What else do we need to know about this poem before we hear it, Philip?
Well, it's written in prose, which is a very different form than any of the other poems in this book, The Country Between Us. So it immediately marks itself off as different from the poetry of the rest of the volume. The entire volume is dealing with Forché's years in El Salvador.
Mm-hmm.
So in its prose form, offers or invites a kind of naturalist documentary veneer. And yet at the same time, we immediately hear how the poem is a poem by its hints of literary artifice.
Let's hear it. Here's Carolyn Forché reading The Colonel.
What you have heard is true. I was in his house. His wife carried a tray of coffee and sugar. His daughter filed her nails. His son went out for the night. There were daily papers, pet dogs, a pistol on the cushion beside him. The moon swung bare on its black cord over the house. On the television was a cop show. It was in English. Broken bottles were embedded in the walls around the house to scoop the kneecaps from a man's legs or cut his hands to lace. On the windows there were gratings like those in liquor stores. We had dinner, rack of lamb, good wine. A gold bell was on the table for calling the maid. The maid brought green mangoes, salt, a type of bread. I was asked how I enjoyed the country. There was a brief commercial in Spanish. His wife took everything away. There was some talk then of how difficult it had become to govern. The parrot said hello on the terrace. The colonel told it to shut up and pushed himself from the table. My friend said to me with his eyes, "Say nothing." The colonel returned with a sack used to bring groceries home. He spilled many human ears on the table. They were like dried peach halves. There is no other way to say this. He took one of them in his hands, shook it in our faces, dropped it into a water glass. It came alive there. "I am tired of fooling around," he said. "As for the rights of anyone, tell your people they can go fuck themselves." He swept the ears to the floor with his arm and held the last of his wine in the air. "Something for your poetry, no?" he said. Some of the ears on the floor caught this scrap of his voice. Some of the ears on the floor were pressed to the ground.
That was Carolyn Frasche reading her documentary poem, The Colonel, from her book, The Country Between Us. Now, there's echoes of Reznikov's sort of dry statement of fact going on there, but there is, as you said, a lot of artifice in this poem.
In particular, the moon swung bare on its black cord over the house. That sense of the moon being described, well, metaphorized, as hanging from a black cord, which immediately brings to mind a lamp being shown in the face of someone who's being detained.
It's still a documentary poem, but she's bringing a sort of a heightened literary language and intensity to it.
Right. I think great documentary poems court their own collapse as evidentiary. Mm. And in a sense, they're self-conscious of the ways in which they're employing evidentiary texts, and she does it. And at the same time, she is constantly playing with our desire to have what is represented in art be factual.
Uh-huh. Now, I notice in your list that, well, Ginsberg was a famous radical leftist, and he wrote political poetry all throughout his life. And I notice in your list that almost everybody can be identified as people of the left. Is documentary poetry is it leftist poetry?
I don't think it necessarily has to be. I was particularly drawn to these examples because these examples very much participated in the idea that the marginal can gain some sense of empowerment and some sense of a voice and legitimacy when documents support the arguments against their oppression or against their exploitation or against their conditions of marginality.
Hit me!
Why did you include 911 as a joke by Public Enemy?
Oh, partly to be provocative, but actually also because I loved Public Enemy. You know, as a white kid growing up in the suburbs, it's a very strange thing to hear songs like 911 as a joke and be quite distant from its reality, and yet nonetheless feel its authenticity. In other words, it's reflecting a certain social reality that people are facing and the outrage about it.
In this case, that 911 doesn't respond so well to
poor people
communities.
Who,
yeah.
Right, that's been a documented problem.
Thanks, Philip.
Thank you.
You can read all about these documentary poems and the poems themselves, plus a lot more poems than we went into here today, on poetryfoundation.org. Philip Metris's latest book of poems, To See the Earth, is published by the Cleveland State University Poetry Center. Please email us your thoughts about this program to podcast@poetryfoundation.org or write a review of it in the iTunes store. Music used in this program comes from the Claudia Quintet. For Poetry Off the Shelf, I'm Curtis Fox. Thanks for listening.